Good afternoon, everyone.
I'm a graduate student from UC Davis, and this afternoon I'm going to present a study that I did for my master's project that demonstrated reduced nitrous oxide emissions in tomato cropping systems under drip irrigation and fertigation. So to give you a sense of where we're headed this afternoon, first I'm going to overview quickly the importance of nitrous oxide, giving you the objectives and hypotheses for the study that we performed in two tomato systems. I'll go over the results that we gathered and the conclusions that we drew from them. So why do we care about nitrous oxide? As we know, it's a potent greenhouse gas that's about 300 times greater the radiative forcing of carbon dioxide. And soil activities, as influenced by agricultural management, are the source of approximately 75% of global nitrous oxide emissions. And therefore, there's potential to reduce nitrous oxide emissions in these intensively managed agroecosystems. So this was great incentive for us to develop our objectives, which were to quantify nitrous oxide emissions in tomato cropping systems under conventional and alternative managements. And we are interested in thoroughly characterizing emissions following crucial management events. And so we sampled intensively following cultivation, fertilization, irrigation, and harvest, as well as winter precipitation events. And we did that by assessing nitrous oxide emissions at three functional locations or spatial locations in order to assess variability across the field, and then use that to calculate annual fluxes at the field scale. So a little tutorial in where our ketchup and pasta products come from. There are two ways that you can manage processing tomatoes, two typical managements, I should say. And we were interested in comparing conventional and integrated systems. The conventional system consists of a conventional tillage, which is a deep ripping and reforming of the beds on an annual basis. In this system, they use furrow irrigation to supply water to the crop. And there are two methods that they use to apply fertilizer. The bulk of the nitrogen is applied at the beginning of the year in a side dress application where they shank it into the shoulder. Subsequent N applications occur through the irrigation or water runs. And the integrated system was composed of a reduced tillage, and that's both a reduction in tillage frequency and depth due to the presence of a subsurface drip system. And that requires that the planting beds are preserved from year to year. In this system, the farmer also uses a winter grain cover crop, or a Tritigale trios. The fertilizer and irrigation management approach in this system, or the strategy rather, is to apply water and fertilizer through the drip tape. So that's where the term fertigation comes from. And then within these two systems, we identified those three functional locations in relationship to water and fertilizer application strategies. And so we are assessing the emissions at the furrow, the side, and the berm. So we had our chambers set up in those three functional locations in both systems. From these systems, we hypothesized that the conventional system would have larger annual fluxes, and that those fluxes would be dominated by the highest emissions at the side and the furrow position. In contrast, we anticipated lower emissions from the integrated system, with the bulk of those coming from the berm position. So to give you a sense of what the data looks like as it's coming out, we are sitting on farmers' fields and measuring emissions after they initiate their management events. So this is an integrated fertigation event. And you see with the green arrows, those are the fertigation events that the farmer applied, and we're sitting out there measuring on a daily basis for 7 to 10 days following these events. And we see a nice response in N2O at the berm position here after the fertigation events, a nice peak with each one, and then an irrigation event at the end. So ramping this up to the annual scale, These are results from the conventional system. And this is the way that we display our N2O emissions in relationship to the three environmental parameters that we're measuring simultaneously. So we have percent water-filled pore space or soil moisture on the second line. Our mineral N is represented as nitrate and ammonium on the third and fourth lines. And we see that these environmental parameters, as well as the nitrous oxide fluxes, respond nicely to our management events. And so we have our fertilization in red, and the nitrous oxide producing quite significant fluxes following those initial fertilization events after the tomatoes are planted, on the order of 0 to 100 kilograms N2ON per hectare per day. We also see water-filled pore space being highest in the furrow position in this field, and we also have our nitrate and ammonium levels responding to those fertilization events. Contrary to what we expected, we thought that the irrigation event would produce also a nice nitrous oxide flux. We did not see those to be as high as the fertilization events, or as you see later in the season, the harvest and the first rain event. The first rain event had nice fluxes as well as responses in soil moisture and soil inorganic N concentrations. Turning to the integrated system, we see that our nitrous oxide fluxes are in general lower, between 0 and 20 grams N2ON per hectare per day. Our water-filled pore space is also lower, with not a lot of discernible difference in our spatial locations. We do see responses in nitrate and ammonium in the system as well to our fertigation events. I'll also draw your attention to the harvest event having a nice spike in N2O emissions, and I'll talk more about this in subsequent slides. So we can look at nitrous oxides by event to see which management events are indeed producing the largest fluxes. We had anticipated that in both systems we would see the largest fluxes from our fertilization and irrigation events. And indeed, this is true for the conventional system, where during the growing season, that second and third fertilization event produced the largest fluxes. And we also see a very nice response from our first rain event in the fall. And that's occurring around October. In contrast, in the integrated system, we saw lower emissions than we anticipated for the fertigation and irrigation events during the growing season, but quite high emissions for the harvest and for the first rain. And this may be due, for harvest, for tomatoes, they mechanically harvest them, and in the conventional system, they do not chop the crop residues. They return the plant whole to the field. And in the integrated system, they actually mulch the crop residues, and so you have this nice minced product that's returning to the soil surface, supplying carbon, nitrogen, and soil moisture to the microbes to either nitrify or denitrify very quickly. But in both systems, you have a high volume of tomato mass that's returning. And if you live in Davis, you smell this, you experience rotten tomato as you drive down the road. So there's a lot coming back in moisture and nitrogen that's available there to produce these fluxes in both systems. But the integrated system, again, might have a higher flux due to the mincing or the mulching of this crop residue. So we can look at spatial variability by management, and we see that within the conventional system, we have higher emissions that are more spatially variable, with the highest emissions at the side and the furrow position. In the integrated system, we see kind of a uniform variability across the three positions with no significant difference. Looking at the cumulative nitrous oxide emissions, and this is a representation from planting to after the first rain event. So that's what I'm constituting as the growing season. And we see that the conventional system is about 3.5 times higher than the integrated system. Looking at N application rates and the frequency of application, in the conventional system, the farmer applied 237 kilograms of N per hectare across 4 applications. In the integrated system, the farmer applied 205 kilograms of N per hectare, split across 8 applications. And the tomatoes responded favorably to this with a higher yield. We can also calculate using the percent N loss, or N fertilizer loss is N2O. We can calculate an emission factor for each system, and it's 0.87% for the conventional and 0.29% for the integrated. So indicating that the default value, the IPCC default value, would overestimate for these two systems. So in conclusion, characterizing these two systems, we can see that nitrous oxide can be reduced without a yield penalty, and improved use of fertilizer and water with the managements of fertigation and the split applications that are possible through that have the ability to better synchronize N availability with crop demand, and therefore, or thereby, reduce N loss via nitrous oxide emissions. And so management practices like this that attend to improved use of fertilizer have the potential to be permanent, and such that nitrogen that is not taken up by the plant cannot be lost as N2O, regardless of subsequent management. Some implications for future research that can come from this study include in recognizing additional spatial locations or variability in spatial locations for drip and furrow irrigated fields. In the furrow irrigated system, we've got these large main ditches or head ditches where the fertilizer is dripped in for those water-run fertilizer applications. And so there is a potential that there's a lot of nitrous oxide lost from basically this large furrow at the head of the field, because that's where we saw the largest emissions of nitrous oxide was from the small furrows within the field. So it would be important to quantify those losses there. Within a drip system, you have a lot of line leaks, and that would be an area where water-filled pore space is going to be higher, as well as the fertilizer N rate is going to be different in these hotspots. So it would be important to quantify those. It's also would be important to investigate other losses of nitrogen from these systems, such as leaching, to characterize where else do we see N loss besides nitrous oxide. And then we saw higher yields under drip, and this has been shown in other studies as well, but how long do higher yields last under drip? When do you have soil compaction becoming an issue, and really thinking of the longevity of these systems? So with that, I'd like to acknowledge the crew in our lab that put a lot of effort into these very frequent measurements, as well as the Packard Foundation for funding. So thank you, and take any questions.
Can you elaborate on your sampling chambers and your techniques, and did you make any attempt to account for background nitrous oxide?
So we used static flux chambers made out of PVC with about a 20-centimeter diameter. And we measured from those on a daily basis post-events, post our management events, and then every 10 days we took a measurement, and every 10 to 12 days, regardless of whether or not there's a management happening. And so then when we look at these values here, you often see that there's like a baseline that's being measured in between management events.
Is that chamber just sunk into the soil?
Correct. Yep. And then
you're pulling off the headspace?
Yes. So we would cap the collar for a duration of an hour, taking a sample at time 0, 30, and 60. And then the collar stayed in place unless the farmer needed them to be removed for a management. And then in the furrow irrigated system, I removed the collar naturally for the furrow irrigation events. Yep. Great question. Yes. So that's where in looking at differences of tillage, the integrated system, this was from 2010, it was ripped deeply prior to the growing season, and this was the first season that that drip system was put in. And so I did not look at tillage effects. And then we repeated the study in 2011, you know, following tomatoes to, because they do rotate them naturally, and so following them to additional fields, and they had the same thing going where they were again putting in a new drip system for that 2011 field.
Clarify how many fertigations were on the drip. I thought I saw three.
There were three.
The last slide is at eight.
Correct, yes. So there were three that I physically measured.
Well,
and then there were eight.
Period there, why didn't you
So I was definitely constrained in the amount that I could do field work, so that would be one aspect. And then I did measure more than these three, so I constituted this as one event that I measured. And then when I calculate my cumulative, I extrapolate from the number of events that I managed, the number that the farmer used, and I use the ones closest in time to multiply up to the what the farmer actually did. Yeah?
Why do you think there is a difference between the two approaches?
I really think it comes down to, I can't tease apart fertilizer and irrigation strategy, but I think it is a combination of both, like the ability to apply less fertilizer more frequently in the fertigated system and really synchronizing the unavailability with the crop demand. And tomatoes are notoriously, I guess we could say, lazy, like poor in their end recovery in comparison to other vegetable crops. And so really being able to apply the fertilizer directly to the root zone means that there's less that's able to be lost. If the plant's competing with the microbes to take up that N, then the microbes aren't going to be able to get a handle on it to turn it into N2O. With the conventional system, they're really applying a large percentage of that nitrogen right at the beginning of the season. So that application at the beginning was 147 kilograms of N, and that's, you know, he applied 247. So that's, you know, almost a third that's being applied right at the beginning.
Plus, you'd be wetting and drying more extreme and longer.
Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I think you also induce different rooting systems, like different rooting structures of the tomato with the two irrigation systems, and that would also play into your efficiency of take-up, as well as, what you know, do you induce more denitrification in one system or nitrification in the other due to these oscillations between wet and dry?
What's the source of N? Was it the same in both?
That's a great question. So the source of N is not the same in both. So for the integrated system, that was a UN32 that they passed down the drip line. And in the conventional system, he with his water runs, it's a CAN17. And so that's where I'm just looking at a management strategy approach versus trying to tease apart fertilizer type. And I think you do see differences in fertilizer type when you have soil moisture conditions being quite different. And so if you're applying a CAN17, in a wetter soil condition, you might have the potential for more nitrate to be lost in denitrification versus a UN32 going into a lower water-filled pore space soil. You're more likely to have nitrification in that setting.
Did you measure nitrogen in the fruit take away from the field? Did
you get that? I didn't, and that would be something to do to be able to calculate a nitrogen use. The yields were not similar between the two systems.
So if you assume constant nitrogen, it's the same amount of balance.
Say again.
So you've got 50% higher export of fruit and 10% lower input of nitrogen in your drip system. So provided the fruit at the same nitrogen concentration, you've actually got a substantially lower surplus.
Correct, yes. And these systems are definitely not N deficient. If the UC Davis extension advice is 140 kilograms of N per hectare per year, they're definitely in excess of the N that is required.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, can you clarify again the nitrogen source and the conventionally CAN is calcium ammonium nitrate?
It's a calcium ammonium nitrate.
The
shank is a different, it's a 24082, so it's a dry application that they put into the shoulder. And that would be the bulk at the beginning of the season, and then it's the calcium ammonium nitrate that's in the water runs.
Any more questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.